welcome to episode 3 of the XYZ Machine Tools podcast. If this is the first one you've watched, welcome along. We hope the content today is going to be something that you'll enjoy watching and listening to. If you've watched the first two episodes, then thank you for coming back and wanting to learn all about what we do here about XYZ Machine Tools and other topics to do with general engineering as well. We've had some great feedback from the first two episodes and people are starting to engage with us, which we really appreciate. So to help us gather momentum on these podcasts, if you could like it and subscribe, that'd be great. And then of course they'll come immediately to your inbox and you'll get to watch the latest episodes as they get released. Today we're going to move on to a different sort of topic in this podcast, and we're going to talk about quality. So joining me today on today's podcast is James Shaw. He's XYZ's quality manager. So welcome to the podcast, James.
Thank you, Mike.
So let's start by introducing you and telling the viewers what sort of role you do here and how you managed to become this position of quality manager.
So XYZ was probably one of my first real jobs, especially long-term jobs as well. Before I was a CNC punch operator, I only stuck that out for about a year and I wanted more than just being sitting behind a machine. So I came to XYZ originally as a machine builder. So I started building the Prototrack lathes, and I only did that for about 4 weeks before a position became open within the electronics department. And because of my electronics background through my academic college years, studying electronic systems, they thought I'd be a good fit. So I then spent the next 8 years, I'd say, as an electronic technician. And my main responsibilities were to refurbish Prototrack control systems. And some of the stuff I worked on was interesting, shall we say. Some of it was old as me.
Oh, right, okay. you're showing me off now as being an old man, but never mind.
So some of the stuff was manufactured a couple of years after my date of birth. That was interesting. And then the opportunity arose for me to become quality manager. So I've been doing that now for 2 years. So I've worked for XYZ for a total of 10 years now.
Okay.
It flies, doesn't it?
And has it been a great learning experience, you've moved into this position of quality manager?
Yeah, it's nothing. I never foresaw the opportunity to become quality manager. So I was initially shocked at the opportunity, if I'm honest with you. Especially when I was filling in some shoes for someone who has masses of experience. So
I think you're talking about me, really.
I am talking about you,
Mike.
Because
I had a spell as quality manager as well. So thank you for the compliment. So I think that, you know, for a business the size of XYZ here, to have a quality manager is a very, very important role to have. You know, we deal with suppliers from all around the world, really, as well as in the UK. And the way that we build machines here, I think quality is of utmost importance to make sure that our customers are satisfied with the product that they receive. So I think part of that is that I'm going to move on to the fact that XYZ do have ISO 9001. And my first question really is, how long have XYZ had ISO 9001?
ISO 9001 is focused on a quality management system. Okay, and I believe we've definitely had it over 10 years, Mike, because we've had it ever since I started XYZ. I assume it's a little bit longer than that.
I think it is. I remember sitting in a meeting when we were discussing about whether we should go through I'll use the word pain of getting the accreditation, but it's actually turned out to be not as bad as we initially thought. And I think that was because we were offered a tender from a blue chip company, and when we read through the tender, it highlighted the fact that we needed to be ISO 9001 registered. And I think that highlights the point that you've just said there. It's not just about the quality of a machine, it's about the whole structure within your business, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. It's heavily focused on customers, which for us is the machine tool that we sell them. And also the services, which we haven't mentioned. So the applications training, the servicing and repair, breakdown cover, it covers all of that. And then you also have to remember we got a big factory here to do all that. Yes. So we need to keep up the maintenance, upkeep.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that, all those sorts of things.
It sounds to me like it's a quite a large topic, this. So what do we have to do? I know we have inspections on a pretty regular basis here at XYZ. The people come in and do the, you know, the interviews with people and on all this sort of stuff. So what sort of work is involved in making sure we hold on to this certification?
So if we're talking about, that's just one aspect of the business, I guess. Really, obviously it's our main focus is selling machine tools, but like we said earlier, there's a lot of maintenance around the factory around from that as well. However, so if we focus on that from a production point of view, a service point of view, is the machine tool built to set standard? And we can do things like verification with products such as like a Renishaw ball bar, for example. Mm. So a great assurance test. So, but the add-on to that is that from a quality management point of view, we have to ensure that the procedure is being followed correctly, so the tolerances are set, that the guys that are inspecting the machines are ensuring that this machine is within that tolerance, and we're selling the customer a product which meets the specification we have told them.
Okay? Yeah.
But also to do that, I just mentioned the Renishaw ball bar. We have to ensure that the equipment that these guys are using to build the machines and to do the test analysis on is calibrated.
Mm.
You know, we need to ensure that it's working properly.
Yeah,
if you had an out of calibration Renishaw ball bar and you're testing your machines, from a quality point of view, I'd say that's a waste of time.
Well, waste of time. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, so part of it is we have a equipment log. Buildings and equipments log, which can look at things like equipment maintenance. When we look at calibration like that, so we've got things like torque wrenches that we use as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gauges, set blocks, torque wrenches, multimeters, all these types of equipment that we use to build the machines must be calibrated.
So we obviously do all that work in the background to ensure that our machines are built to, like you said, a set standard, a quality that people are expecting, and we quote as well, I believe. So does that mean that when a machine goes out in the field and if it has a small problem, we can trace back and see, yes, it passed the ball bar test here, so that, you know, we can then go and look at what happened in the field between it leaving the factory and being at the customer either when it arrived or even after they've used it for a while.
Another one there, Mike. So document control, that's a big part of the quality management system. So we have vast amounts of documents here and procedures, and we ensure that we keep them all up to date, that people are using the latest document because we use revision control. And then we also store historic documents, like something that will be helpful, such as a build inspection report on a machine tool. And our service team can then reference that, even when they're commissioning. So they can see, what did XYZ get at their factory? We got this. Okay, I've now gone to the customer. I'm now getting
that. That's the minimum we're going to expect. Maybe better, but that's the minimum we're going to expect. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's quite an enormous topic. And so has it took you a fair amount of time to get into the running these procedures and what we have to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've spent 2 years now, and I feel that we're now up to date with all our procedures, and we have lots of cranes here. We have forklifts. How we move the machines around, we have to ensure that these are maintained so that from a business point of view, we have continuity planning as well.
Yeah.
Say, for example, one of our cranes went down. How do we carry on working as a business?
Mm.
So we've got so first of all, we do annual maintenance on them. So we ensure that we get, hopefully, that we get the less downtime as possible. We have contracts set up so we can get people in on within 24 hours. And then we also have additional options. So we have 3 cranes here at XYZ, and then, so we could use another one. We have forklifts which can also move machines, that sort of thing.
Mm. See, listening to you talking there, James, it sounds to me like ISO 9001 is like an umbrella over the business to make sure that everything is done in a structured way. There's no cutting corners for the guys that build the machines and commission the machines. They have a structure to work to, and it means conformity to making sure that the customer gets the best quality product that we can supply. So having this accreditation, which, how often do we get inspected?
Every year.
Every single year?
Yeah, so it goes through. So firstly, we have an external accreditation. And the guys that we use are UCAS accredited as well. So this is important. We have ISO 9001 UCAS accredited. So you and I, for example, could set up a, this might be a side hustle for the business, we could set up a ISO external auditing company and we could create certificates and we could hand it to you. So we could go down the road and say, do you guys want to be ISO 9001? Yeah, you and I can walk in, fill out a couple of documents and give them a certificate. But that hasn't been accredited by UCAS.
Right, so okay.
So that's very important as well, as we're actually UCAS accredited. So we do yearly external audits, and then every 3 years we'll do a major audit, which is recertification.
So it's an ongoing process then, really. It never seems to stop to me. It's always keeping going and rolling and making sure you're on your toes and everything within the business is up to the level and specification that we dictate that we should do.
Yep.
So what from now you've been in this role 2 years and you've learnt all about this, what do you think having this 9001 accreditation brings to XYZ?
So we talked about, you know, probably the first initial reason of going for it was market credibility. Mm. And then we want to ensure that machine tool is built to the specification that the customer has purchased.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned at the start of this that, you know, we decided here at XYZ to pursue getting ISO 9001 because there was a tender come in. And do we see it a lot where we get asked to be, are we conforming to these standards, to be able to quote customers and be able to sell machines to customers because we've got that advantage of having the accreditation?
Correct, yeah. We promote this heavily as well. You know, it's on most of our documentation that we have this ISO 9001 standard. And yes, more and more now, as companies have a much higher demand for quality, they start asking suppliers if they have this accreditation.
Yeah.
In the same way as that we do for our supply chain as well.
Oh, well, I was just going to ask you that question next, because obviously I see as I walk around the factory all the work the guys doing, filling in their inspection sheets and all the work that goes on. What about our suppliers? What about the people that we get the machines from, we get chucks from, we get all our ancillary items from, tool measurement devices, and all the things that get added onto a machine that we supply? What about our suppliers? Do we expect them to have the same level of accreditation, or do they slide under the radar, I suppose?
It's great if they do. It depends on the product, really,
yeah.
And the market. So the majority of our supply chain has ISO 9001, plus other ISO relevant standards for a business. But what we do have, Mike, is we have what's called like a supplier log. Approved supplier log, as it were.
Right, okay.
And inside that, there's different categories. So we will categorize each supplier independently based on their accreditation. Sometimes we'll go do audits.
Mm.
So the supply chain manager and myself may go to a business, normally a UK business, but also international businesses, and we'll do supplier audits on them. So we'll do an assessment on them, which
we have
formal procedures, assessment forms, etc. All part of this ISO 9001 quality management system. So we'll fill that in and whatnot. But if they do have ISO 9001 accreditation, then it gives us confidence so we don't have to do certain inspections. So say, for example, on a goods inwards inspection, we want something, a particular product, and this company doesn't have ISO 9001 certification, then we're going to put much more eyes on. We're going to do a much more thorough job of that inspection process, which again is built into the goods inwards inspection process.
Yeah,
the first
thing
they do is look at the approved supplier list. What type of category of goods inwards inspection am I doing here? Oh, they're this category. I have to run down this procedure. Mm. It's just a massive flow, really.
And so because we do all that work with our suppliers, do you feel that it helps drive our suppliers to ensure that they're providing us a quality item and it's driving them to do better as well?
I believe so. I think XYZ quality department has massively ramped up supplier feedback in the last few years.
Yeah.
I've got some interesting examples, should we say, where I've gone to a supplier and I've said, this is not to drawing. Mm. You know, this particular product that you've supplied is not to drawing. Well, that's how we've always made it. Yep. I've gone to do some more investigation work, and yeah, it's always been wrong since day dot. They started supplying the part. Right. Mm, yeah. Okay. So I've gone back to them and said, right, we need to change this now. And yeah, to start with, you may get, you know, you don't want to offend people in a way, but at the same time, we strive for a product. Mm. You know, if we're buying a product, it needs to meet this. It's going to our customers at the end of the day. We've got to put our name on our suppliers' products.
Yeah. And I guess part of everything that you do here within this quality is measurement of whether we see an improvement in performance. So because of the work we've done over the last few years in terms of our quality, are we seeing tangible differences to when a machine gets out in the field? Are they lasting longer? Are they performing better? Are we seeing something where we can say to people, yes, because we have improved our quality structure, we're seeing this happening out in the field?
Yeah, so part of our management system is to collect and correlate data as well. And then we analyze it. And yeah, we've got certain metrics that we follow, which we review weekly, monthly. And then we sit down with the directors and we look at the trends and the change. So yeah, there's a lot of analysis work going on now, which wasn't going on years prior. What I've seen from the new directorship that we've got here is that they have a massive ethos on quality. Mm. You know, not that we didn't before, but it's just been ramped up.
With new directors, XYZ have morphed over the years from that small little company that Nigel Atherton started.
Correct.
And it's grown and grown and grown, and these things come along as part of that growth process, don't they?
Yeah, and we've got more machines out there. There's more to manage. Right. You know, we're just growing and growing. So with that growth, we look for changes or improvements, shall I say. For the better, and with new directors, with new experiences, and they can bring quality into the business in the way that they feel fit, you know.
And so I'm interested to know whether with the amount of data crunching that you guys now have to do with this, is there any place for AI in assisting with that, do you think, or is that it's still going to be a manual process? Or, you know, where do you see the quality being developed with things like AI? Because AI is all the rage at the moment. Everybody's talking about it, from packaging of your own merch, if you like, for want of a better description, through to genuine benefits of using AI.
It's an interesting topic, Mike. Very interesting. I'm sat on the fence a little bit, because in some ways AI can help massively. But also my first initial experiences from AI was quite poor. And we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, so AI can create procedures in minutes that would take a human a day to do. Right, so there's great benefits there. I think you also need to be careful about who owns that procedure once it's been created. So say, this is just an example idea. Also recently, I put in to AI a piece of me and one of my chartered engineers in the team were... We were just interested. All the kids were talking about AI. Let's see what it can do. So we started putting in some hard questions. So we were looking at legal compliance questions, and we were putting them in, and it was answering wrong.
Yeah.
So this actually shocked me. So you cannot rely on it at the moment.
No, and they do. A lot of the AI sites that I visited, and along with what I do here, they do put in the caveat that, you know, this data might not be correct, you need to check it out. And I listened to an interesting podcast a few months ago on my way into work with an American guy who said, if you're not into AI, get into it now, because it will be the future. And he said at the time, it's not perfect yet. There's still a lot of training for it to be done. But he said, by everybody doing that training, it's going to make it get better, quicker, faster. It's interesting that you've explored it and you've seen some benefits already, but it's not perfect.
No,
but the more people use it, the more people train it, it is going to help humankind, if you like, to do it.
Yeah.
So, but I think you are using it to some degree at the moment. You were saying to me the other day.
One of the great benefits that we've actually used it for is for meeting minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so if we do Teams meeting minutes, it's great for producing summaries. especially, and you can define what type of summary you want. Do you want a director's summary? Do you want a technician summary? Do you want an engineer summary? Do you want a salesperson summary? So you can do that. And then you can also say, right, during that meeting, what are the actionables and who are they to? Which personnel are going to take them on? So for meeting minutes, it's brilliant.
So there are advantages to it then, and it can get things right. So I'll be interested to see in the next few years when I come back and do another podcast with you, how you've been able to push AI and use it to your advantage, especially with a lot of data collation. I think that's the thing, isn't it? But we don't just have ISO 9001 here at XYZ, do we, James? We also have another ISO accreditation. So, and it's in a different sort of arena, really, isn't it? So what's the other accreditation that we have?
So the second accreditation we have is ISO 14001, which is an environmental management system. So luckily, because we're already set up with the quality management system, which we've been set up for 10 plus years now, it was easier for us to implement 14001 because we're already used to the system that we're running. And we can just incorporate that into our already existing system. So we have like a dual system, as it were. So things like incident reporting, which is a major topic for us within both ISO systems, which we deal with, I'm going to say, at least daily, you know, is all within the same system. So what ISO 14001 on is focused on reducing your environmental impact as a business. And we've done that in a number of ways. So things you can look at, which is a nice metric to check how well you're doing, is looking at your carbon footprint. So part of our ISO 14001 objectives, major objectives for the company, are reducing our carbon footprint. And there's lots of many scopes. This becomes a monster project now. So you can look at what's individual in the XYZ business, our sales guys, our service guys driving cars, how we use electricity within the factory, and then you can even get even further and start looking at your supply chains. How do they build their product that we're buying from them? How is it getting here? All that sort of thing. So massive topic.
Yeah, and obviously here at XYZ, over a number of years, we've done things that I'm guessing have helped us achieve this accreditation a lot easier perhaps than it would have been if we were starting from scratch. So I'll use the biomass boiler as the first example here.
We've had
a biomass boiler for a number of years here, and it was because the way that the machines are delivered to XYZ, there was material that the machines very often, not all of them, but a lot of them come on a wooden pallet. And what did we do with the wood? It's not acceptable these days to have a big bonfire every week and just burn it, is it?
So, definitely not.
So we took advantage of an opportunity to install a biomass boiler here. And the advantage of that, of course, during the winter months, we can warm our factory up by using that process. But that's not the only way we've tried to tackle and help sustainability, is it?
No, there's lots of other ways. Like, actually, this week, we recently replaced all of our factory lights with LED.
Oh, okay.
So that helps out as well.
Yeah.
Especially when they started failing. The old fluoro light started failing. It does make sense. There's no point putting new fluoro up. We'll put LEDs on. Yeah. There's an investment there from the company as well. Yeah. It's more expensive to invest in the LED lighting that we want. However, the offset of that is less energy. And if you think about it from an initial investment, there's just a period of time before you start reaping the rewards of that. Yeah. We also have recently, a few years ago now actually, put solar panels onto our roof.
Okay.
So we're looking at trying to reuse renewable energy for our machine builds to offset that carbon footprint. Mm. And interestingly, I did some analysis on this, again, part of ISO 14001, and that analyzed the data that we correlate. A few months ago, we used just under 25% was energy from solar panels.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're actually looking at increasing the number of solar panels at the moment. Mm. Initially, when we put our first system on, we were limited by the actual grid, by the electrical supply into our factory. We can only export so much. We were only allowed to put that amount, X amount in to put back into the grid. But now we really want to challenge that because we see the benefits of this renewable energy, not just for the company, but also for the environment.
And we are classed as quite high energy user here, of course, because, you know, we
when people see the line of machines being built here, they all run on test. It's always taking power up. So we are quite a high energy consumption, aren't we? And I mentioned in the last podcast with Mark Hickson about, you know, the government in their latest industrial strategy document want to try and help people that use a lot of energy, but we don't quite fall into that category of, you know, we're not smelting plant or something like that. So we don't fall into their really high category. So I think installing solar panels and trying to increase that number, we've got the roof space to do it. I think it's a good thing to help both the environment and the business to move forward. So like ISO 9001, James, are our customers asking us, are we compliant with ISO 14001 as well then? Or is that not filtered through yet as something that people want to know that XYZ are a sustainable business?
Yes, even in my small time as quality manager, 2 years now, I've seen a trend in tender documents, questionnaires as they were, is more specifically talking about ISO 14001 now. So I've seen the ramp up of the requirement for our customers. We want to meet that for them. And then we also reap the benefits of it ourselves. So it's win-win, really.
Yeah. So we do all of this, and I suppose the offset is that we're helping the environment, we're producing better products. So, you know, when people come to invest in an XYZ machine, we're in a good position. We're a largish company. You know, we are the largest seller of CNC in the UK by volume. So I think all this gives people confidence that we are a sustainable business that are trying to move forward. And hopefully it gives people confidence to come and purchase a machine from XYZ. I want to move on to some of the other parts of your role here, really, in... And again, it comes under the quality regime because obviously a lot of our machines are CNC machines and they're fitted with software and it all needs testing. And recently there's been a new release of the Prototrack software that's been launched out and it's all on our website now. So this new latest version, what's the latest version called?
So it's 3.2.2.
And one of the biggest things about it is they've spent... Southwestern Industries have spent a lot of time trying to draw together separate elements of the software. Am I right in that thinking?
You're correct, yeah. So we've got what we call, well, they're all tool room products, you know, the RX range we're talking about specifically here. So there's obviously lots of different lines of products. We've got tool room lathes, we've got bed mills, and then now we've got the new
TMC
which is given an extra element to the software. So they have different branches of software, and this is pulling them all together.
Okay, so it's going to make it easier for customers then when they download, when they go to our website to download the software, because of course they can do the upgrade themselves. They don't have to rely on a service engineer visiting. It is possible for them to do it. There is instructions on the website. We've even produced a video to tell people how to do it. So they can upgrade their own machine, and it's going to make it simpler for them to search for the software they want rather than, oh, what machine have I got or whatever.
So easy. So from an RLX 1630, probably our baby lathe, into our TMC 1600, our biggest VMC, they're all going to be on the same software.
And Southwestern Industries has done quite a lot of work on this version of software, haven't they? I know from a program insider point of view, which is the bit I tend to deal with a lot with my videos, etc., they've added some features in like optional stop and some extra features within the programming and stuff like that. But that isn't the only side of it that they've looked at, is it? They've done other things as well.
Yeah, so in the hardware, in the back, there's a computer module, which is the brain of the CNC system. Basically, what you're looking at the front is the front HMI, does the G-code processing, creates the file.
The interface between the operator and
then
the CNC.
That then gets sent to the computer, and the computer is what actually controls the motor sets, etc. So they've done massive improvements on that.
Yeah.
And how the computer controls the machine.
So we're highly recommending then to anybody with an RX generation control, either RMX or RLX, that there could be benefits for you if you go to our website, download the latest software, follow the instructions, upgrade your machine. There'll be some benefits for you to do that.
A programming point of view, and then also from
a performance
and a performance point of view. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that software is on our website now. It's all ready to go. It's and you can download it if you want. If you do get stuck with it, of course, there is always the option to call in into our service team, and they'll guide you through. Jonas and Ben and James can do that to help people.
Or if a customer really isn't confident on doing it, they can request a service visit, and our service engineers will be happily to update for them.
We're not going to create downtime for customers by because they can do it themselves.
They can do it themselves.
So, because we've focused a lot on quality here at XYZ, one of the things I've noticed is your team has got a little bit bigger lately. You know, you still look after the electronic test department as part of your role. And we've got some long-term guys in there. Paul Curry's been here a number of years now, and he's got vast experience in the electronic side, and I'm sure you've learned a lot from him over the years.
A true engineer, I call him.
You call him a true engineer. And he has stacks of paper on his desk with all sorts of information that you can trawl through. Yeah. But you've increased your team by another staff member recently as well, haven't you?
So we've just taken on a quality technician. It's a newly postgraduate, and he has filled the role of managing the quality and environmental systems on a daily basis. So the majority of his role is highlighting and processing incidences. So obviously nothing's perfect. You know, on the odd occasion we'll get supplier issues like I talked about earlier, where something's not correct or to specification, and he plays a vital role in capturing that data, feeding it back, and then also ensuring that there's a preventative action. We put that onto our supplier. How are they going to ensure that we don't get this again?
Yeah.
And we do much the same for our customers. Mm. So when we get warranty issues, particularly on our machine tools, something we hate having, of course, then you know, George will process that, and he will look at the preventative action for that. How can we stop this from happening again? You know, we're all on the journey of continued improvement. Mm. For striving for perfection.
I'm just going to deviate slightly here to ask a question that, you know, we continually hear about skill shortage and lack of people wanting to get into engineering and stuff like that. How easy was it to find George and the caliber and the requirements and qualifications that you needed? Was it easy to do, or did you have to hunt for a bit?
I'm going to say it was a challenge. It was interesting. They all seemed to come in buses. I had nobody, and then I had loads of people.
So, it wasn't because it was the end of the university year or something, was it?
No, it wasn't actually. No, it wasn't. It didn't time up like that as well.
Right, okay.
But we've also just recruited a new engineer. So as we just talked about Paul, a true engineer, as I'd say. Paul's actually a chartered engineer as well.
Okay.
So he's professionally recognised through the Institute of Engineering and Technology, which is just shows the caliber of person that they are. And we've now recently recruited a new guy, and he's also professionally recognised as well within the same institute, which is great. And they don't come along that often.
No. And I think it's quite important for XYZ to have those people with those skills and technology levels, because you know a modern CNC machine tool is quite a complicated piece of equipment. It's not like the old manual days where you had a screw that was connected to a handle and it just wound the table along or the saddle along a bed. They are complicated pieces of equipment, and I, over the years I've been here, I've seen Paul delve into an electrical cabinet with oscillating meters and stuff like that, and so. To find these people and they want to come and work at XYZ is a bit of a bonus for you, really.
It is great. They a lot of them don't actually know we're here. That big company, you're here.
I was interested in that question about George, and I'm the guy that's going to work alongside Paul for a while, because Mate UK recently put a report out that said there's apparently 46,000 vacancies in the UK in the engineering industry. And not being able to find the right level of staff to fill those vacancies is costing the UK, get this, £4 billion in lost output. It's an absolute phenomenal amount of money because, you know, the right people are not filling the vacancies, and therefore it's affecting UK PLC, really. And that's quite it's quite worrying, really, that, isn't it?
So it is. It would be great if we could bring some more manufacturing onshore in the UK.
Yeah.
But to do that, we do need
Well, that leads me to an interesting point, James. We've this week held our first autumn seminar that we're running at XYZ. For the first one was for the press. So the engineering journals that you'll see around the UK, they all came in to see how XYZ are moving forward and what we're doing to some ways alleviate the skill shortage. And one of the things that we showed off, apart from a new product, of course, which you've covered in previous podcasts, the 400 UMC for multi-phase machining and five-axis simultaneous, is the fact that automation can be fitted to XYZ products. And we had a real-life example of that here. We had a robo-job product here from Hydrofeed that was loading one of our machines. And quite interesting comments from the press that they're fully aware of automation. Of course they are, that's their role in the industry. But it's people not adopting it within their industries. And so we're going to run some seminars in the beginning of November down here in Devon and up in our Nuneaton showroom in December for the general public to come and see the benefits of adding this sort of equipment to your XYZ machine to make you more efficient. And we've got a speaker coming along as well who, he's a real life example. He now has three robots in his facility, and he's purchased those robots over only an 18 month period. So once the first one was installed, he's seeing massive benefits, and he's jumped on and said, right, this is the way my business needs to move forward. It doesn't me either. And now we've had the robot installed here at XYZ. I've had an opportunity to get on there, and I'll be doing some video stuff on it in the next few weeks. But the interface was just like XYZ's products with Prototrack and Siemens. The interface is so simple to use. We were trained in probably, I guess, half a day just over. And we could take a raw billet, put it in the machine it knowing our technology, and then take it back out again, even flip it over if you have to do. So the interfaces on this product now have developed just like machine tools have. You know, the interface for a Prototrack control and the Siemens control make it so simple to program and use. If people are interested in coming to those seminars to see our new products and how they can integrate some modern technology, get on the website and register yourself to come and visit. And we'd love to see you come along and show how XYZ are developing technology. But again, when we add this sort of stuff, James, I suppose it adds more complication for you as part of the ISO and the quality standards, really. So
it does, Mike, but that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
We got to keep manufacturing competitive in the UK. And to do that, unfortunately, to do that, you're going to have to use automation.
Embrace automation and take it on board. Yeah. So I think today's been a really interesting conversation, James. It's more of a fact of explaining to people that, you know, XYZ, we're serious about quality. We put it on a very high priority, and the things that you're doing with the ISO and having to do all of that ensures that, to the best of our ability, the products that are leaving this factory are the best they can possibly be. And, you know, things go wrong occasionally because of mechanical items and electrical items. And I'm sure you look at Pareto graphs to highlight all that stuff and say, well, perhaps we should change manufacturer of this particular part or whatever.
It's a mindset, really, at the end of the day. You can look at that as you can get really upset about it, saying that's a big issue. Or you can look at it as an opportunity for improvement.
Yeah.
And that's how I flipped my mindset over the years to look at it.
Yeah. So thank you for your time today, James. I found it quite an interesting conversation. I thought I'd just sit and listen to you, but I actually have taken it in, and I found it very interesting. So carry on the good work. I think it will only stand XYZ in good stead. And if you want to know more about what we do here in terms of quality of the product that we sell and whatever, feel free to reach out and contact us. You know, we have a dedicated email address for these podcasts. It's podcast@xyzmachinetools.com. Or you can just contact sales@xyzmachinetools.com. Feed us the questions, give us the feedback. If you found today's topic interesting, then let us know. We want to know what you want to know about. So we want to develop the podcast so that you guys want to watch it, want to learn stuff. It's not all about, as I said in the first episode, XYZ machines. This is about the general engineering world. So again, thanks to James. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode. We're running them about once a month, so keep an eye on your download platforms that you use to download your podcast for the audio version, or check out the XYZ YouTube channel to get the next edition of the podcast. And we look forward to seeing you the next time.